January 23rd. This morning, once again, my head woke up blessedly blank. My first few dreams last night were unusually turbulent, disturbingly so, coming in the kind of cycle you cannot break simply by waking up for a few minutes. Back to sleep, the dream picks up right where it left off. Finally, I decided to get up for a while, do some paperwork, watch some ESPN. It worked. Then was deep sleep for 5 hours straight, until almost 8. Quite late for me. That continuous block of sleep, quite a treat. I walked for a long while today with my head down, more than a mile, thinking nothing. I did notice that the path was different from a couple of days ago, those pattern-scattered beech leaves now coated with the granular snow sleet that came down last night. But it was almost as if someone else was seeing it, utterly dispassionately. I'm in such a state of mind so rarely, as I said, that I savor it, crave more of it. I tried a few times to force a line of thinking, that insatiable urge to write something down, but no dice, just ongoing quiet. As I turned down the road, I noticed one leaf sitting alone on a wide swath of white like a king or a saint, so serene. And I remembered a photo my friend Yan sent me a couple of days ago, a single leaf on a field of snow. Yan is a writer, primarily fiction, but she also has a gift for photography. Every photo she sends me, taken from her phone, is breathtaking. The framing, the depth, the detail, the kind of images you just get lost in looking at. To her, they are just snapshots. My photos, which I rarely take and even more rarely send, are actual snapshots, the kind a 5-year-old with a shaky hand might compose. They are comical by comparison. Anyway, I spent most of the rest of my walk thinking about Yan, about what a great gift it has been to have her for a friend these last few years. The kind of friend that is so good you mostly don't even notice it. No drama. That good. I recall the first time I met her, just over from China, via India, I think, to start an MFA degree here. I was scheduled to teach a rhetoric seminar that fall, and she came to ask me if I thought she could handle that kind of work. I could tell within a minute that she could. She is, for one thing, extremely smart, quick-thinking, capable, I would guess, of grasping almost anything. She is also quite kind, a quiet kindness, very human. And funny, a dark sense of humor. All things I like in others and that are, to me at least, just as pertinent to the question she came to me with as her intellectual acuity. But what struck me most is that she was not in any way struck by me. I'm 40-plus years older than Yan. I am an established scholar, a professor, the sort of presence that inspires most graduate students to exaggerate my gravity, to which they react either deferentially or resistantly, depending on their mood or temperament. Yan just said what she thought, over and over, whether she agreed with me or not, like a normal grown-up might, neither dazzled nor irritated by my status or standing. The academy, you may or may not be surprised to find out, is not heavily populated by grown-ups. I could go into all my theories about or justification for such a generalization, but I'm not going to waste your time or mine with that. I'm sure most academics would disagree. I don't care. I stand by my claim. So, for me, encountering a grown-up who will talk with me as if I am a grown-up too is always deeply pleasing. Yan took 2 of my graduate courses and did extremely well in both. One of the things I realized just today was that even when she was in one of my courses, that unbalanced power relationship that we, on the higher side, need to navigate so carefully for all good ethical reasons, I could still just have a conversation with her, a normal human conversation about art or writing or life or anything else at all. What a joy that has been, another human presence treating me as if I am another human presence. I'm always utterly and completely honest when I talk to other writers about their writing, whether they are freshmen in a composition course or eminent colleagues sharing a draft of an article. And I could do that with Yan without complication. She would still stop by my office from time to time just to say hi, talk for a few minutes, send me a friendly email, often with photographs. In all the meantime now, she is married. I stood in for both hers and her now husband Gwosi's parents, who were unable to attend their very small wedding here in Pittsburgh. Given birth to a beautiful son, Eli, whom I have spent some time with these first few months of his life. I joke with Yan from time to time that Eli is more grown up already than many of my colleagues. Because he is. Via Yan, I have met a number of other Chinese women, her stepmother, two of her roommates before she got married, her friend, and now mine, living in England, Marion, who inspired my Li Po poems and who corresponds with me regularly, sounding always just as honest and human and funny and kind as Yan does. Every single one of them, quite independently and spontaneously, told me somewhere along the way that they thought I was handsome. There was no awkwardness to it, just their honest appraisal delivered matter-of-factly, the way I talk about someone's writing when they share it with me. That is more than the sum total of all the American women who have told me I am handsome over the course of my entire life. I'm not what you'd call classically good-looking. A nose too big, a narrow chin, quite thin most of my life, and very self-conscious, almost embarrassed at times to look like I do. One of Yan's roommates, Julia, such a quietly strong person, was very sweet to me during her time here. When she was leaving to return to China to get married and start her career there, she gave me a gift, a photo of Ralph Waldo Emerson, and she told me again how handsome she thought I was, just like him. Most American women would not, I'm guessing, think Ralph Waldo Emerson was handsome. But he does look a little like me, the oversized nose, the pointy chin, the eyes, both soft and alert-looking. It helped me to understand what she and the others meant. I joke now that I just look better in Chinese than I do in English. All of that has been a blessing to me during this time of such great loss and repeated failures in the aftermath to get new relationships going here. Yan has introduced me via online links to Chinese poets, Chinese opera, and via conversation to Chinese history and politics. Last fall, on one of my walks, while I was trying to figure out something very vexing in my current life, I had a quick image flash through my head of a scene in a Chinese rice paddy. Just a few seconds, almost a still image. Somehow I knew, or thought I knew, that this scene was set 2,000 years ago, in a far distant lifetime. That's how things come to me sometimes, just a brief vision like that. The eye in that scene was maybe 20 years old, stuck ankle deep in the rich black muck, bright clear sun, not baking hot. A cloud-infused blue sky reflected on the shallow water. I was looking up at a dirt road that ran alongside the paddy on an embankment. There, a brocade-covered litter carriage, the kind with two long poles that four men used to carry it along, was stopped. A beautiful young woman, just visible through the side window. I looked up at her and was captivated. Falling in love with anything, which I do all the time, as you know if you've read this fall, is always, I believe, a choice. That yes, triumphing over no for reasons hard to fully fathom. Sometimes we make it slowly, over months or years. Sometimes we make it in a split second, at first sight, which is what happened there. I knew that she was way too wealthy to be available to me even to talk to, let alone get to know. So I just went back to my work. That image has many layers of meaning to me, most of which I won't go into because they are not pertinent to my purpose here. But I've come back to reflect on it over and over on my walks, trying to fathom more fully what I suspected were its multiple and subtle significances. The way I might read and reread a provocative poem, say, dozens of times, hoping to gather what it proffers. I came to believe late last fall that if I do have to come back here again, which I hope I don't, because I already know everything I care to about this particular world, the dark, the light, all of it. This current iteration was not meant to be another occasion to indulge the earthly emotions that were instigated with that gaze. It is an opportunity for me to resolve them once and for all. I took to that work eagerly and immediately, and I think I'm doing pretty well so far. One thing I know for sure, if there ends up being a next time for me, I want to use it, not to dig in deeper here, but to seek a way out of this earthly cycle for good. I know enough about Eastern religions and early Greek philosophy to recognize the road. That's the one I'll be looking for next time around. All of that is, in any case, a sidetrack from the significance of that image more pertinent to this essay. If there are multiple lifetimes, then I was once Chinese. Maybe many times. There were four other figures, young people like me, planting rice in that paddy that day. Two of them women, looking at me, smiling, as I looked at that road. Because I was so riveted on the woman in the carriage, I didn't end up with clear images of them. But I have just decided to believe that they were earlier incarnations of Yan and Marion, my good friends. Maybe the two men were Guosi and Eli. 2,000 years ago, we all stood together in a field planting rice. Yes, that's what I just decided to believe. The more I learn about Chinese culture, art, customs, and people in this lifetime, the more it seems a fit for me. I have no desire to become Chinese again, or even to go to China. I just happen to like and get along with the Chinese people I meet here. And there are many of them now, as Pitt has begun to recruit more and more international students, most of them Chinese. Just last night, I got an email from a Chinese man I had in class last year. It came in at 3:15 a.m. I was half awake and heard the phone buzz on the side table, so I looked at it. Here's what he said. Dear Mr. Paul, I am sorry for emailing you so obtrusively. I heard from Thomas that you are going to retire after this semester and move to another city. It is such a shame to hear news like this because I was actually planning to take one more class of yours next semester. Among all the teachers I have met in this university, you are the one that I like and respect the most. You are knowledgeable in a way that you can unconsciously influence us. And each time, after our class was over, I always felt like I learned a lot from you. To be honest with you, my mind was open after I took your class, and I learned to look at things from so many different perspectives. Sorry about all this nonsense. I just really want to tell you how grateful I am to be one of your students. I am really glad that I had the opportunity to take your class, and it was an honor to me. Thank you so much. Mr. Paul. I remember this young man quite well. If you had asked me yesterday how he might feel about me, I would have thought he'd be irritated. I put pressure on him to work up to his potential. But remembering it all in more detail now, we had the same kind of conversations I have with Yan. I said directly to him what I had to say. He responded honestly with exactly what he had to say back, like grown-ups. One of the things Carol and I both noticed and talked about once we passed 60 was the difference in the way we were perceived by young people in the current culture. At work, teaching, we professors were highly regarded, larger than life. Away from work, our elevated status invisible, we were diminished, duffers, I guess. This was sometimes funny, sometimes painful. All of my students now are young enough to be my grandchildren. They are, at least in part for that reason, I assume, quite respectful, often sweet and kind to me. But it feels disproportionate in some way. I was quite puzzled for some time about why I just felt more normal with my Chinese students. One day last summer, this thought came to me. Maybe they have a category in their head, a space, where old people are still fully human, neither larger nor smaller than life, neither more nor less valuable than younger people. So our interactions feel real, more fully human. That may or may not be true, but like so much of what I've written here today, it is all beside the point, which is this. Today was my day to cherish Yan, her good friend, now mine, Marion, and all the Chinese women who think I'm handsome and tell me so, matter-of-factly, in a way I am now inclined, and quite happy, to believe.